I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there. Next hour, I'm going to have a couple of guests in studio with me. It's Kelly Williams, who I've known for a few years now. I'm very fond of her, as she was an integral part of the fight for medical marijuana here in the state, and now she is setting up one of the new facilities here to take advantage of the business. I believe in Jackson. We'll get the details. I ran across a story about her that WLBT did, talking about this new industry that's coming to Mississippi. And we're also going to talk with some call-in guests, some other people from this movement, because it is starting. The fight for freedom is starting a new initiative here in this state, and we're going to start talking about reining in these local hystericals and how the people can override some of the decisions of these local governments that are trying to keep these dispensaries out. It is like keeping a pharmacy out of a city, but there are the hystericals that will tell you it's something different, and some of you may have bought into the hystericals and the control freaks. I understand. Many people are vulnerable to emotional appeals and fear-mongering. We've been seeing that for about 2 years now. People are pretty easily freaked out by stuff. We saw it with the casinos when they first came to Mississippi. I lived through that here in Mississippi, and there were many people out there telling you doom and gloom. The state was going to devolve into a mob-run den of iniquity. People everybody losing their homes all at once when the casinos come in. But if you think objectively, you love freedom, then you should join us in trying to bring this medicine to people in every community. And you know, I think to think of it this way, if you're a conservative, they're telling you that if you allow medical marijuana into your community, terrible things will happen. Now, this might resonate, I might understand that talking point working if this had not been tried in, I believe, 33 other states already. Colorado is the one that I've experienced the most, just because I've visited there. And it is a very wonderful and prosperous state. I mean, how is this possible? And it's really the same to me as COVID. You know, New York, when it comes to COVID, New York tells you, the authorities there, from the health departments down through the bureaucrats and the politician, they tell you that they need to protect you with just endless masking and vaccine mandates, because if they give you freedom to choose, it would just mean the death of everybody in New York. Yet Florida showed the United States and the world that these fears are unfounded, that freedom actually was better. So Florida has done better economically. They've had better health outcomes across the board. Florida has had a level of freedom and has emerged the victor because they did not listen to the hystericals in Florida. In Colorado and other states like it, are to legalized marijuana what Florida is to COVID freedom. It's only different that the hystericals in the medical marijuana issue are the police, district attorney's offices, petty tyrants who feel that they're morally superior to anybody else. And these are a lot of politicians and bureaucrats that are on endless big pharma products. You know, so this idea, this is really one of the easiest things, too, because We're now talking about a county by county, city by city, with these kind of really imaginary borders between these places where cities are saying, I don't want this kind of pharmacy in our town, but you're going to be able to drive 5 miles, 10 miles. For some poor people out there, it's probably going to be 50 miles you have to drive to be able to find access to this plant medicine. And then what are you going to do after you take that 50-mile trek? You're going to put it into your car, and you're going to drive 50 miles home right back into that town that kicked the dispensaries out or kept them out. It makes no logical sense whatsoever. So I will be in this battle. We're going to talk. The signature gathering is beginning. I believe Gluckstadt may be the first metropolitan area here that they are going to target with some level of petition gathering. So I've already announced, if anybody has a petition gathering event for any of these things, you can email me, MikeMadison@WIAB.com, and I will let people know where you will be gathering signatures. And we'll find out today with the people leading this first effort in Gluckstadt, exactly what's involved with it, what they need to do, the number of people that need to sign. Because my understanding, it may be 1,500 people. And from being somebody who has a little bit of signature gathering experience, I would believe that could be done in a few weekends. So at least they did not put the hurdle too high to override the control freaks that control our societies. Anyway, we'll talk to Kelly Williams and then some people from the signature gathering efforts that are going to get started next hour. This hour, I'll start with quotes of the day today. This was Aldous Huxley back in 1949. He said, within the next generation, I believe that the world's rulers will discover that infant conditioning and narco-hypnosis are more efficient as instruments of government, more efficient than clubs and prisons, and that the lust for power can be just as completely satisfied by suggesting people into loving their servitude as by flogging and kicking them into obedience. And the infant conditioning is what really resonated with me on that. I mean, if you cannot look at what your governments do at every level, how they treat you like children, particularly the Democratic Party has got their people convinced that they shouldn't be able to get up and tie their own shoes, decide what to eat for breakfast, get out the door all by themselves. The Democrat Party says they need to be involved in everything. Republican Party does many of these same things. To Republicans, just not quite to the infantilization level, I think, the Democratic Party. Here's one of my favorite quotes. This is Friedrich Nietzsche. He says, the individual has always had to struggle to keep from being overwhelmed by the tribe. If you try it, you will be lonely often and sometimes frightened. But no price is too high to pay for the privilege of owning yourself. That is what this entire show is based on, right there. The value of owning yourself, independent thought, being able to go against the tribe when the tribe is wrong. We do not play the tribe games here on this show. And too many people are just too scared to talk out and speak the truth when it goes against their tribe. Not much more do I suffer the slings and arrows of the tribe more than criticizing Donald Trump, but I am owned by nobody. And there's a great meme out there that says, I do not stand with Russia. I do not stand with Ukraine. I do not stand with NATO. I do not stand with the UN. I stand with the people in each country who are held hostage by governments that start wars, destroy economies, and subjugate our lives. Amen. I should get a T-shirt made up of that. And then we're going to get into, I got to tell you, I've got a pretty funny story here. I saw this in a column today. It's a government website, and it was so absurd that I had to check it out myself. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take a quick break here. I'm going to come back with a quote from Buzz Patterson and then get into this. I mean, I got to tell you. Holy crap. Our government that we fund with trillions and trillions of our dollars is basically a compilation of corrupt and special needs bureaucrats. It's pretty embarrassing when you see it. Anyway, I'll do this quote from Buzz Patterson. There's some advice on the government website about what you should do in case of a nuclear attack. I don't know how long it's going to be. Hopefully this stuff with Ukraine wraps up, that they get some kind of a peace deal, that Putin gets his eastern Ukraine the rest of Ukraine denazifies and we can put this behind us. But if not, I would imagine our kids are going to be doing duck and cover drills, because you can't make people scared enough when it comes to the government. They'll probably be demanding duck and cover drills, because I think if anything, science has proven, it's that the a melamine desktop will protect you from all nuclear radiation and fallout. So, you know, these are the things that kids did in the 50s and 60s when they terrorized us about nuclear weapons the first time around. Well, this could come back around. Well, the government's on top of it. They've got a way to survive a nuclear attack. You're going to absolutely love this. We'll do that when we come back. Stay with me. This is the Mike Madison Show, 1039 WIAB. Salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the wise side of reason. But they don't give you any choice, because they think that it's treason. So I ran across a story today that I thought was so absurd, but I didn't really believe it. I wanted to talk about it, and I thought for myself, well, no, I'm not going to get duped. This has got to be some kind of a Babylon Bee thing, so let me check it out first. And I should have known better. The dumber something is, the more likely it's true. I'll take a look at that in just a second. Matter of fact, I guess I need to pull up the U.S. government site now. Your tax dollars hard at work. And I ran across this quote from Buzz Patterson. Really says where we are right now. He says, and just like that, everybody on Twitter evolved from being infectious disease experts into international affairs and nuclear weapons experts. Magic. And isn't that the case? There's a comedian that's put out a great skit. He does these things kind of about the social justice movement. And he's got one about somebody walking, you know, they're saying that they're this new Stand With Ukraine. They got a hashtag Stand With Ukraine. So this is my new identity now. I don't care about COVID or any of those things. All those things I was wrong about, I'm leaving that in the dust. You can't hold me accountable to that. Now I'm all about Stand With Ukraine. And this is the new thing. It's actually very funny. It's not very good for audio because there's some visual to it, so I can't play it. But that's what's happening now, is we've gone from being infectious disease experts to being international affairs and nuclear war experts. And so this was kind of funny. I thought this was kind of tie this together. If you go to ready.gov, it's going to give you a whole host of all kinds of natural disasters, how to get ready for them, goes through everything. But it's got a segment in there, a section on nuclear explosions. Now, I would imagine this has been around for a while, maybe since the 1950s. I mean, not in website form, I'm sure, but I'm sure these things have been here. They've always, as I said, they used to get kids to hide under their desk in the face of a nuclear explosion, because, I don't know, I just carry a desk around with me. You know, if I'm driving down the road and I see a big mushroom cloud, I just jump into the back of my car and I pull out my my one-piece desk and I crawl under it. Everything should be fine. But this is what the advice that your government gives you if it comes to a nuclear attack. I'm doing this as a public service announcement because I love listeners to WIAB. I care about you. I want to make sure that you're safe in the event of this nuclear exchange that the Biden administration is desperately trying to kick off, it appears. So their advice is to get inside the nearest building to avoid radiation. Brick or concrete are the best. You need to remove your contaminated clothing and wipe off or wash all unprotected skin if you were outside after the fallout arrived. Now remember, hand sanitizer does not protect against fallout. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth if possible. Do not use disinfectant wipes on your skin when it comes to the fallout. This is all stuff that people probably don't know. It's a great thing that I'm here telling you these things. Now, here's where it gets very specific, and I want everybody to pay close attention. If you need to, pull out something, a piece of paper, a pen. You know, we're on the cusp of World War III with the other giant nuclear power on the planet because, you know, the neo-Nazi government of Ukraine is somehow a victim that we need to light a candle for. So take your notes here. Go to the basement or the middle of a building, so similar to a tornado. Stay away from the outer walls and the roof. Now, here's where it gets really important. If you really want to save your life in the event of a nuclear attack here on the United States. So this is the real stuff. So you're inside the middle of a building. You've made it to a basement. Now, this is when it gets real. Try to maintain a distance of at least 6 feet between yourself and people who are not part of your household. If possible, wear a mask if you're sheltering with people who are not a part of your household. Children under 2 years old, people who have trouble breathing, and those who are unable to remove masks on their own should not wear them. But for the rest of you, 6 feet, you're in a basement in a post-apocalyptic nuclear wasteland, but make sure that you maintain a 6-foot circle of social distance. This went on to say, let's see if I can find it here. Oh, yeah, if you are able to set aside items like soap, hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol, disinfecting wipes, and general household cleaning supplies, so you can disinfect surfaces that you touch regularly. So this is all here. Surviving during the attack. Now, this is after the nuclear fallout has happened. You're sheltering for your lives. If warned of an imminent attack, immediately get inside the nearest building and move away from windows. This will help provide protection from the blast, heat, and radiation of the fallout. When you have reached a safe place, try to maintain a distance of at least 6 feet between yourself and people who are not part of your household. If possible, wear a mask. Oh, my gosh. I got to tell you. You know, it's very interesting. There's a funny... It might have been a Babylon Bee story that went out there. You know, Ron Paul's been warning about all these things. He's been warning about NATO expansion and how it's going to kick off stuff with Russia. He's been warning about the inflation and endless money printing. Even Jack Posobiec, I think yesterday I read the tweet from him that he said, just in case anybody's wondering, all of the things Ron Paul was talking about 10 years are coming true right now. And there's a Babylon Bee story, I believe it was, that said, Ron Paul says he's sorry he couldn't have done more as he seals himself into his underground bunker, nuclear bunker. This is where we are as a society. But, if it started going off, it's kind of an interesting thing to think about. There's all the – I've got food. I've got storable food. The reason that I got storable food was that I could – so I could eat. And my biggest fear was a credit crisis. Because I understand the way that trucks and transportation move about the society. I understand just-in-time delivery. I understand if you have a cascade of defaults or an interruption to the credit markets, that a lot of trucks that use debit cards, essentially, to fill up their trucks that are all based on credit accounts at big trucking companies or food manufacturers, those trucks will just be parked on the side of the road if their credit is cut off. And so I got food for that, for myself and for my children to get through that. When it comes to nuclear holocaust, I'm not so sure I'm going to take a lot of mitigating efforts. You know, there is life and there is existence. I'm very, very interested in life. I don't know how long I would want to be one of the mole people. And I got to tell you, there's probably going to be a lot of survivor-on-survivor violence. If you find yourself in some kind of a bomb shelter deep underground for a prolonged period of time with some of the hystericals, pull your mask up. The whole world is on fire. Crops and cattle are dying all around you. And I would imagine there are people out there that are going to be concerned whether or not you're properly wearing your cloth or paper mask. Holy cow. This is your government, ladies and gentlemen. Want to make sure that you social distance when it comes to nuclear fallout. Now, there are people smarter than our government, and some of them are in the NBA. We've talked here about Kyrie Irving and his endless saga with the NBA. Now, I guess the update is that Kyrie Irving, he plays with the Nets, doesn't he? New Jersey Nets, I believe. Please pardon me for not knowing any of this stuff. I really couldn't care any less about NBA basketball, although I am enjoying Winning Time, the new series on the Los Angeles Lakers. I was a huge Showtime fan of the Los Angeles Lakers. That was probably the most fun tribe and rivalry I ever had with anybody during high school. We had some of us were Lakers fans and some people were Celtics fans. And then the mental defectives, the troublemakers, the outcasts might have been a Detroit Pistons fan later on. But before Michael Jordan made everybody a Chicago Bulls fan, it was the Lakers versus the Celtics. And I was on Showtime with Magic Johnson. You know, back when everybody was so racist that we we really loved the Los Angeles Lakers and Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Although, by all accounts, not a great human being. Anyway, I digress. Kyrie Irving now, I believe the situation is, if he's in New York, he cannot sit on the bench. He cannot play a game because he's not vaccinated. But he can sit right behind the bench without a mask, being unvaccinated, along with the rest of the people in the stadium that are unvaccinated. It makes no logical sense, and people are starting to notice. This is Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant did a press conference the other day, and, you know, I don't know a whole lot about Kevin Durant. I know he's accomplished great things. I'm always surprised at how incredible he is. He's got the skinniest legs I've ever seen. But it gets him up and down the court, and he's an incredible player. But, you know, even some of these NBA players, this kind of absurdity of what's going on with Kyrie Irving are just making them say, what are you doing? What is that exactly are we doing? Even the high school dropout who have made it, maybe will have made his way into the NBA or any sports, or hopefully just out in general population, you could have dropped out of the sixth grade. And you've got to understand the absurdity of some of these rules as they're presenting them to us now. But this is Kevin Durant on the Kyrie Irving situation.
It's ridiculous. Like, I don't understand it at all. I mean, it's a few people in our arena that's unvaxxed, right? Like, they lifted all of that in our arena, right? So what's the – I don't get it.
It's a second mandate that says he can come in but can't play.
I don't get it. It just feels like at this point now, somebody's trying to make a statement or a point to flex their authority. But, you know.
That's what they've been doing for 2 years, just flexing their authority and just watching people submit to it. About 30% enthusiastically. About 40% begrudgingly, because they just didn't want to cause any problems and they wanted to be seen as a good person. So they did all of the efforts. And then over the past 6 to 12 months, they've all been getting COVID and getting hospitalized. And even they are starting to wake up and say, yeah, I'm not playing this game anymore. This didn't work out so well.
Everybody out here looking for attention. And that's what I feel like the mayor wants right now.
And he's talking about the new mayor of New York, Eric Adams.
Attention, you know, but he'll figure it out soon. He better. But it just didn't make any sense. Like, there's unvaxxed people in this building already. We got a guy who can come into the building. I guess, are they fearing our safety? I don't get it. So, yeah, we're all confused. Pretty much everybody in the world is confused at this point. Early on in the season, you know, people didn't understand what was going on, but now it just looks stupid. So hopefully, Eric, you got to figure this out.
Yeah, it looks stupid. I hate to say it, but this has looked stupid from the beginning. It looks stupid for them to tell you in a post-apocalyptic nuclear wasteland that you need to social distance within your bomb shelter. This whole thing is just a level of idiocracy that is hard to believe has come to this country and to Western countries around the world, apparently. And what's so funny about this whole thing, Africa, the continent of Africa, save maybe South Africa. I think they went a little hysterical down there because they're the closest thing to kind of a Western-styled country. Now, they've gone full-on hard socialist now, even in South Africa. But the African continent is kind of looking around at the whole rest of the world going, what is everybody freaking out about? We're fine down here. We've got no shoes. We live in a mud hut. We're fine. What is everybody so worried about? The insanity of this thing in the modern Western world is amazing to believe. Anyway, Kevin Durant finally sees it. Everybody else is finally seeing it. I wish you people walking through the grocery stores and your pointed N95 mask would finally see it. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Next hour, we're going to take a look at what the medical marijuana industry is starting to shape up as in Mississippi. What kind of jobs are being created? You know, where with all of these municipalities opting out because of the hystericals in those governments, we're going to talk about, number one, how to fight back about, against that, but, you know, how the industry is adjusting. It's the same number of people in Mississippi will benefit from this plant medicine, regardless of where it's available. So I don't know it really negates any demand, but we'll take a look at that. We're going to talk to some people that are opening up a facility. I've had one guy on that's opening a facility up in Canton. And we've got one that's opening up in Jackson. Say what you want to about Jackson, but maybe they won't step on their own toes with this and allow a new industry into that area. There is a big headline out of the Wall Street Journal today that I doubt very many people are going to pay much attention to at all. It's not going to be sexy. It's not going to be tribe-like. It's not going to be anything that people really typically engage in. But boy, it could be a really big story. Wall Street Journal has a report, quote, Saudi Arabia is in active talks with Beijing to price some of its oil sales to China in yuan. Most people may not even understand what the petrodollar is. We've certainly talked about it on this show. I've heard other shows on WYAB talk about it. But we've had an incredible privilege here in this country. After World War II, we got the dollar to be recognized as the reserve currency of the world, meaning constant demand for U.S. dollars, which means that essentially our government's been able to borrow just endless amounts of money from other countries and keep our bonds and things like that in constant demand because people needed dollars to trade oil. Well, let me take that back. Originally, it was because the U.S. dollar was backed by gold. It was actually had some value to it. In 1971, Richard Nixon took us off the gold standard temporarily. Temporarily. As they say, there's nothing more permanent than a temporary government program. You know, so in 1971, he temporarily removed us from the gold standard, and we have never gone back again. I see no indication we're going to do it now. I was told during the Trump administration he was about to bring us back to the gold standard. Any day now, I'm sure. But the other thing, so when we unpegged from gold and realized we basically were playing with phony monopoly money, they set into motion a plan with the Saudi Arabians to trade oil, to have the oil markets require dollars for all trade in oil. This kept the demand for dollars without having that pesky gold standard backing it so that our politicians could endlessly spend and the Federal Reserve could endlessly print. But we still had some value. We still had demand for our dollars because you had to, and the world's oil markets used dollar to settle those trades. Well, now, Saudi Arabia, which is so odd because they're such stalwart great allies, right? Joe Biden is making calls to the Saudis, please pump some more. I wonder if he discussed the 81 beheadings that Saudi Arabia did just a couple of days ago during that call where he begged for more oil. The very first foreign trip that Trump made was to go do the sword dance with the Saudis, our stalwart allies. Well, he also sold them a bunch of weapons for the military-industrial complex. He had a big poster board with all the billions of dollars of weapons that Trump was selling them. And Trump also sent 3,000 of our sons and daughters, brothers and sisters, moms and dads halfway around the world, and they are right now protecting Saudi Arabia. We're actually also providing them with bombs and logistics and mid-air refueling for their brutal, brutal assault on Yemen. I don't see anybody hashtagging I Stand With Yemen anywhere online or in social media. The Saudi Arabians are essentially just murdering thousands and thousands of Yemenis and putting them into a hunger and cholera crisis in that country. It's a true humanitarian crisis that predates any migration out of Ukraine. The media has been completely silent on it. Donald Trump had a chance to get us out of it, and he vetoed the bill that Congress actually tried to get in there and weigh in on some foreign military involvement. They actually, you know, they haven't done this. They haven't declared war since World War II. They finally said, hey, this Yemeni thing, we don't really feel we're getting anything out of this, and the Yemenis didn't do anything to us. And so they actually passed a bill and sent it to President Trump's desk. Stop our involvement in this assault on the Yemeni people. And Trump vetoed it. So we are still up to and including today, and the bombing recently has even increased. You want to see some true human suffering? Take your eye off Ukraine for a nanosecond. Take a look at Yemen and the images coming out of there. I saw a headline. I think it was on Drudge. There's a new child refugee every second in Ukraine. This has been going on for 7 years in Yemen at the hands of the Saudis. You know, our great ally, the Saudi Arabians. Hell, we fight wars for them. We got troops protecting them. We send them weapons. And we've made them massively rich by allowing them to largely control the price of oil around the world. And how about that? They don't have a whole lot of loyalty to us. What a shocker. Saudi Arabia is smart, though. They see the writing on the wall. They see that the politicians in the United States have bankrupted this country, that our days as an economic powerhouse are numbered. Our weaponization of the dollar by throwing sanctions all around the world on anybody who does not go along with exactly what we say, exactly when we say it. We've weaponized the dollar, and the countries like Russia and China, and even India is now looking to do trade with either China or Russia using the rupee. All of these countries that have been under endless sanctions, Venezuela, North Korea, Iran, even some of our allies dared to do business with Russians when it came to the energy markets, like on Nord Stream 2, and the U.S. sanctioned them as well. And so everybody's ticked off at the U.S. for bossing them around with a dollar. They're all looking for ways around it, and this is a big way around it. Saudi Arabia is in active talks with Beijing to price some of its oil sales to China in yuan. And the amazing thing is, this won't be talked about. It may be mentioned. A vast number of Americans will continue to focus on the things that truly don't matter to us and not pay attention to the things that actually do matter to us, and this being one of them. This is one of probably 100 shoes that are beginning to drop when it comes to what's happening around the world and what could happen to our financial system. This story in Zero Hedge said, this move by Saudi Arabia to talk to China about selling oil to them in yuan instead of dollars is a move that could cripple not only the petrodollar's dominance of the global petroleum market and mark another shift by the world's top crude exporter towards Asia, but also a move aimed squarely at the heart of the U.S. financial system, which has taken advantage of the dollar's reserve status by printing as much dollars as needed to fund government spending for the past decade. This all lays at the feet of every politician that has gone up to Washington, D.C., unless they have vocally and with their votes resisted all this endless spending. And I don't know many people could name anybody who's done that. It has not been anybody from Mississippi. They've gone along with this spending. And I'm telling you, this is one of those things that is coming. And it's not going to change if you vote for more R's. It's not going to change if you vote for more D's. It doesn't matter who of this crop of our political class controls the White House or Congress. They all spend, and they have done it because they've had this privilege of the dollar reserve status largely pinned to the petrodollar. And if that disappears, this is going to be big for the United States. We kicked Russia off swift because we don't like them. We got to rattle sabers with Russia. They will find an alternative to the SWIFT system, which some of them already exist. I've been doing more of a dive in this SWIFT. It's basically a messaging service about between banks saying, hey, credit this account for this amount. I'll deduct this amount from my account. It's a communication service. It appears to be almost kind of antiquated, but it was what kept everybody kind of in line doing a standard version of financial transactions around the world. Now we've kicked Russia out of it. We're threatening to kick other people out of it. I think we took Iran out of it. This is one of the things with SWIFT. We kicked Iran out of it. I believe I'm recounting this correctly. We kicked Iran out of it. When was that? I can't remember exactly what year it was, but it was in the early 2000s. And so when we did the nuclear deal, one of the things was when the conservatives love to talk about the pallets of cash that Barack Obama sent to Iran And they always leave out, like most people do, we leave out the history. The money that went to Iran was actually their money. It wasn't taxpayer funded like the $14 billion that just went to Ukraine or is in the process of we're writing checks to Ukraine right now. $14 billion. This money that was given to Iran was actually their own money. We either unfroze a bunch of it in their account so they had access to it again, or we refunded some of them, but they weren't a part of the SWIFT system because we'd kicked them out. So they sent the cash, and yes, there was a ton of corruption around that. I'm sure the mullahs got their hands on some of it. I'm sure there was no accountability to it, but it was Iran's money in the first place, and conservatives love to ignore that fact and continue. I've played Sean Hannity clips. We gave Iran all this money. We didn't give them anything. We let them have their own money back. But this abuse, weaponization of the dollar, it's coming home to roost in Saudi Arabia. Should they decide to just let everybody, you know, come up with an alternative system to the U.S. dollar and trading oil? You think things are expensive now? You just wait. When we come back, I'm going to play Peter Schiff. Peter Schiff is like Ron Paul. As a matter of fact, Peter Schiff during the Ron Paul campaign was Ron Paul's economic advisor. Peter Schiff said things before the financial crisis in 2008 that he was laughed about. You can go do a search for Peter Schiff was right. There's a 5 or 6 minute video, I think, of him going endlessly on CNBC, on Bloomberg, on all of these financial, on Fox Business, where he said, look, I think we're in big trouble here. You're going to see a housing crash. And everybody laughed at him. Art Laffer, conservative hero of the right, was just laughing at Peter Schiff. I believe he bet him a dollar or a steak dinner that he never paid off on. They were all laughing at him. He predicted exactly what was going to happen in the financial crisis. He's been predicting exactly what's going on right now. And so instead of engaging him this time around, they decided not to laugh at him. They decided to just kick him off. And he's no longer invited on, I think, one show on Fox Business, the Liz Claman show. She's had him on. He's been kicked off of CNBC. They won't invite him on anymore. He's the turd in the punch bowl. I'm familiar with that role. That's what I play here, particularly during the last half of the Trump administration. But now he's going to start getting a platform again because everything he's been talking about for years and years is coming true right now. We'll play that clip when we come back. Stay with me. All right, we are back. Final segment now, and then we're going to come back. We're going to take a look at the medical marijuana industry as it is starting to take shape in Mississippi. Finally. So we're going to have some guests there that are opening up a manufacturing facility as well as some dispensaries, and we're just going to kind of talk about it. I want to get a good clear idea of you know, who in Mississippi, what the jobs are going to be in the state here, and what the what kind of form it's going to take. But before I do that, I want to play this real quick. This is Peter Schiff on Tucker Carlson. I may not even get through all of it, but I got to tell you, this guy's been ridiculed and banned for 10 years now, talking about the inflation if we had kept on going the way we were going. And he was right, and he's finally getting a platform to talk about it.
We're happy to talk to Peter Schiff. He's chief economist at Euro-Pacific Capital. He joins us now with his reaction to inflation. Peter Schiff, you hate to feel vindicated over something as horrible as inflation, which really is one of the worst things that can happen to a country. But you have been warning of this for, I mean, the years we've been talking to you.
Oh, sure, Tucker. And it did just happen overnight. Inflation right. has been a problem for a while. We just didn't care about it when it made stocks go up or real estate go up. But now that it's making food prices go up and energy prices go up and rents go up, it's a bigger problem. But, you know, inflation is not created by COVID. It's not created by Putin. It's not created by greedy corporations gouging right. their customers. There's one source of inflation. The actual definition of inflation is an expansion of the money supply. And it's the Federal Reserve that's been expanding the money supply. They've called it quantitative easing, but they keep creating dollars. And it's the U.S. government that spends those dollars into circulation. And as it does that, the value of each dollar goes down. And so the price of everything that you buy with dollars goes up.
So if you're looking, I mean, you grew up in this country. You grew up in what was a middle class country. Measurably, it was majority middle class. It no longer is. Hasn't been for quite some time. And it's becoming completely lopsided. That seems like, and that's That's a recipe for volatility. Okay, so that seems like one of the main effects of this Fed policy.
Well, the middle class is going to feel the inflation tax the hardest. You know, their wages are not going to go up nearly as much as the cost of living. There are other people who are retired who are on fixed incomes, and those incomes aren't going to go up at all. But the cost of living is. And, you know, when we got these inflation numbers yesterday, and they're saying 7.9%, which is the worst inflation since 1982, what they don't tell you is that we had a different CPI in 1982. And if we use the same CPI today that we used then, we would be over 15% inflation.
Well, there's one person who's been telling you that, and that was me. It's about 15%. That's all the time we have for this hour. We'll be back. Stay with us. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. I am somebody certainly that has talked a lot about the medical marijuana issue. To me, it's a freedom issue. I'm also a natural health guy, so I know the benefits of this, and I believe that God has put plants on this planet to pretty much take care of everything we need. And so, medical marijuana has been a very a big part of a lot of different issues that I care a lot about. So the industry is starting to take shape, so I'm enjoying having some people come in. We've had Steve Merritt with Southern Sky Brands up in Canton come on and start to talk about the industry, but now it's starting to really take shape. So today we've got a couple of guests in with me today. We've got Kelly Williams and Chad King, and they are also starting an operation here in Mississippi, so we're going to get some updates from them on what's going on in the industry and what they're up to. So thank you all both for coming in.
Thanks
for having us. Absolutely.
Thank you for having us.
So, Kelly, I've known you for a while. Mm-hmm. We were both involved in the petition to get ballot initiative 65. It was a wildly aggravating journey from,
yes.
I mean, that was these 12 months it took to get the signatures was hair on fire time. It was very hard, a lot harder than I thought it would have been, because I knew that the issue was popular in Mississippi, but Mississippi's signature gathering effort puts up so many hurdles,
right?
Makes it very difficult for you. And we had people from around the country come in and say Mississippi's signature, ballot initiative process was really a lot worse than other states, not very friendly.
Right.
So that was very difficult, but by, you know, probably good margin, but you didn't know till the end of it. We finally got it done. It was popular. You get it in there, and then boom, Supreme Court comes in. They strike it down. Thank you, Mayor Mary Hawkins. Then the legislature's poised to do a special session, and then they whiff on that. I mean,
right.
This has been quite a path. And but you've been involved even before the ballot initiative process began, correct?
Right, correct. That is one thing I think that distinguishes us from every other business in this state. And I say that with confidence. We have been in this from the beginning. As you just said, I've been involved in this since before the initiative.
Yeah.
First donor to 65, attended all the campaign meetings. As you know, got out and collected signatures.
Yep.
With my family, drug my kids around. And even before that, we wrote some legislation that had to do with marijuana in Mississippi. And I think we talked about that before.
Right.
When I was here before. And that was in 2017. So
is that what? OK, so, Kelly, you're an attorney.
Right.
Both of you are attorneys.
Right.
Yeah. Is that what got you into this issue initially, is some of your experiences through court, or what drew you to the issue in the first place?
So, in part, absolutely. Some of the city issues I encountered in court. Also, as you mentioned earlier on, I'm a firm believer in the cannabis plant. I'm passionate about the cannabis plant and about the process by which, you know, I'm not a scientist and I'm not a doctor, but I do know that we have cannabinoid receptors in our bodies,
right?
And of course, we know that there's at least 144 cannabinoids that have been identified in the cannabis plant. So we know there's a natural connection there. So I'm passionate about that. The other part, in large part, actually, that has drawn me to this journey was I have a niece who was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma. As a teenager, and she survived and beat cancer, and so grateful for that. But watching that experience and that journey just affirmed that everybody should have a choice.
Right.
Everybody should have as many choices as we can My father also died in 2018 of Alzheimer's, and that again, just watching those journeys, people should have choices. Again, I think it's about freedom. I think it's about choice. And I just think it's the natural, there's a natural, it won't be for everybody and that's okay, but everybody should have that choice. And so
right.
Those are the things, the influences in my life that drew me to this journey. And as you just mentioned, it has been,
oh my gosh,
you know, years now we have been working on this towards Kelly's Green, which is the company that we're starting. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's also been an issue of compassion to me. You know, it was interesting during the signature gathering campaign. I'd be out somewhere and I'd see three little old ladies starting to walk by my big giant, you know, sign here, petition for medical marijuana. I just think, oh, I'm about to get a lecture. Right. Oh, my gosh, this is going to be brutal. And 9 times out of 10, they snapped their, they saw the sign. They did a double take. They looked over at me. I thought, uh-oh, here it comes. And then they would, no offense, shuffle over to me and just say, just start signing. Oh, right. So many people we know could benefit from this. And it was always amazing to me, in Mississippi in particular, when you can see other states and realize that somebody with a condition here that is suffering, mm-hmm. just by the virtue of the borders around this one, the geographic area they just happen to find themselves in, they have to suffer while somebody a few hundred miles away has got access to a medicine that completely transforms their lives and gives them their lives back. It's, that was really frustrating to me, and I think it resonated with a lot of Mississippi residents, mm-hmm. even in the senior citizen community. And you know, one of the big jokes is if you go into one of these dispensaries out in Colorado, you know, people expect it's just, you know, it's a bunch of Jimi Hendrix music and right. lava lamps.
Right.
But really what it is, it's a bunch of gray hair, blue haired, you know,
that's
older
right.
people
that's
lined
right.
up at these things to get relief on these things. So anyway, I always thought it was really sad to think you have you're a Mississippi resident. You love Mississippi. Your family's here. Your roots are here. But you have a child with a seizure disorder.
Right.
Suddenly you have to make that decision. Do I leave everything that I know and love and a job and family and everything else because I've got this child that has a need that can only be addressed in a state that's got the proper medicine for them? So it's right. fantastic to have it here. Chad, what right. brought you to the issue?
So I'm an attorney too with Kelly. And so one of the very first things that we started working on, or I did in my private practice, was I started working in youth courts. And one of the things that we saw was there was a huge amount of families that were being ripped apart because a parent had come into youth court and tested positive for marijuana.
Right.
And so we had children being placed in foster care. We had parents trying to keep their families together. And but for this marijuana test, there would be no reason to remove their children. Obviously, that obviously tugs at your heartstrings, number one. But number two, it just seemed so ridiculous. And so we knew we were battling sort of these decades of indoctrination of what weed is or marijuana is and all the fear tactics and stuff like that that we saw in the news. So that sort of like lit a passion for me and Kelly, obviously with the legislative change for that, where you can't do that anymore. You can't take somebody's child based on a positive marijuana test alone.
Right.
And then it just sort of grew and grew. And obviously when we started working on 65 and gathering the signatures, what you just talked about, what you found is there were still people around here that you wouldn't think, but that are like, they're okay with it.
Oh, yeah.
Like they understood. And so one of the biggest things about 65 that I think resonated with us and with this state is that I think for the first time it really showed how the people of this state had outgrown their leadership.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I think that was what was so important. I mean, obviously it was a huge setback when the Supreme Court struck down the entire initiative process, which, you know, in and of itself should scare everyone to death, that yeah. the people no longer have a way to amend their own constitution, which is exactly what it is. And so, but we are excited about the program that we have. It's a good program. There'll be some growing pains and some things that we'll learn as the industry progresses, I'm sure. There'll be some amendments, I'm sure. But right now, it is a solid program, and we're very excited to get going.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised in some ways. I mean, I you know, when it gets in the hands of the legislature, you know, I started reading about some huge entry fees and licensing mm-hmm. fees and things like that, and I just thought, oh, are they going to go in there and just really screw this thing up? Because I thought 65 was a good bill. I kind of understood the local zoning issue of it mm-hmm. to a degree. I'll give them a couple little things. And,
sure.
And maybe not, you know, the fact it changes the state constitution. I can understand why they'd want that to be statute instead of constitution.
Sure.
But it came out okay. I mean, mm-hmm. really probably better than I thought it was, but not as good as it could have been. So, you know, what do they say? Well, you're attorneys. If you got two people that as long as everybody's a little bit unhappy.
Right. You know, you got something good.
Yeah, you got something good. Real quick, and then we got to take a break. Mm-hmm. Kelly, was it y'all changed the law and flesh this out just a little bit, because I thought this was important. Were you the one that was telling me about the woman that had gone to Colorado on a girls' trip or something like that, where mm-hmm. marijuana was legal and mm-hmm. then came back and within 30 days tested positive and lost her child? Was that or something similar?
Yes, yes. And so that is one of the things that we were seeing. So, to answer your question, absolutely.
Because I think a lot of people think, well, if you tested positive for marijuana, their first initial visualization is, you know, somebody just kicking back on the couch, smoking a bunch of weed with their kid playing at their feet.
Right.
But that's not real life.
That's not realistic.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, if we have to take a break, we can.
No, go ahead.
But there's another scenario where anyone who came into youth court, though, so it didn't matter why you were there. It didn't matter if it was a physical abuse allegation, a sexual abuse allegation. It didn't matter if the agency was like, we've investigated this. There's nothing going on. Let's just run to court, get it dismissed.
Right.
They drug tested every parent that walked in the door.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you weren't there for anything else and you tested positive for marijuana, they would take your kids.
So they were looking for a crime.
Right. So my first case was getting a lady her children back. She had four children that she had not had in 5 years. Because all she did was test positive for marijuana.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous. Yeah. So,
Yeah, that is really sad. And I hope our hearts and minds are changing on that a little bit. You know, it's very interesting. And I won't drag you into my rabbit hole here. But, you know, I just am completely against the entire drug war. I believe it's done so much more damage than the drugs themselves, as hard as that is for a lot of people to believe. But it is just... It's one of those things where you look at it and people say on one hand, particularly conservatives, they say the family is the most important thing. The things in this country that are ripping apart the family, you know, the welfare state that pays dads to stay out of the home and gives more benefits to single moms, all these things that rip the family. We want people to be productive citizens. You know, everybody needs to go out there and get a job. These are kind of these conservative things. And then the conservatives have also largely supported a system that rips families apart for the same reasons.
Right.
Now, I mean, a parent might need a problem, you know, might need help with an addiction issue.
Sure.
But taking their children away for 5 years is not what the goal should be for any of us. It should be to, you know, keep that relationship as healthy as possible. So,
and you know, I'm a Chasing the Scream fan.
Anybody listening, if you have not read Chasing the Scream and you're all interested in this, and I don't even think you have to be interested, I think it's a fantastic book.
It's a lot of
great history, lot of great explanation of addiction that I did not know at all, with incredible research. So it's a Johan Hari Chasing the Scream, if you're actually open-minded to the drug war issue in the first place. When we come back, though, let's start zeroing in on what y'all are doing, what the industry in Mississippi is starting to take shape as. I'd like to know what kind of jobs are going to be available to Mississippians and how this industry is going to impact the state. We're talking to Kelly Williams and Chad King. They are with Kelly's Green, one of the new businesses springing up around the medical marijuana bill. We'll talk to them when we come back. I went home. The way I always do. How was I to know? She was with we are back. We're talking to Kelly Williams and Chad King. They are the new owners and operators of Kelly's Green as it opens up. So y'all are opening up a facility. What's your business going to be doing?
So we are, I'm founder and CEO, and Chad is our COO and co-founder, and we are vertically integrated, so we will be, we'll be doing everything. We have a production facility that's going up in Jackson, and in our production facility, we'll be cultivating, we'll have an extraction lab, we'll manufacture products. It's going to be fabulous, and then we will have dispensaries across the state as well.
So... everything that takes place, everything that's sold in Mississippi under the medical marijuana program has to be grown, harvested, processed, packaged, everything in the state of Mississippi?
Right. Yeah, yes. it's supposed to be. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're not, I mean, are there going to be big, I'm sure there's huge national brands with some of the huge states that have already done this. Are those brands not allowed to come into the state under their packaging?
No, they can come into the state. I mean, any multi-state operator or anybody who wants to come in.
I mean, if they don't have a facility here, if
no.
they don't grow.
Oh, no, no,
like
no.
they can't. We can't be getting some California company just shipping stuff to somebody and you
not.
Being a distributor
no.
for them. It
no.
has to be grown and processed here in Mississippi.
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything comes from here. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as long as it's. I mean, this the problem. Obviously, I you know, I'm sure this is obvious, but it's because it's still a Schedule I, it's federally illegal, so you can't cross state lines with a
right.
federally illegal substance. That is trafficking. I mean, that's drug
right.
trafficking.
Well,
so,
it's great
yeah.
that they have those laws so that never happens, right?
Right. Yeah. No. Right.
It's you know what? It's so effective. No, it just prohibits.
you see people stacked up along the borders between states all the time, where they're
right.
driving and they go, ooh,
I can't cross.
Can't
I have
cross
to stop
that
right
wall.
Now.
Yeah. I mean.
Well, that's how it's yeah. never been in Mississippi until now.
Right, exactly.
I mean, we've never had marijuana here.
Well,
so.
And we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but thank goodness Gluckstadt has put up some kind of force field
right.
around Gluckstadt, and they're going to keep it out of Gluckstadt. That is insane. All right, so what does this look like for the state? You know, I have no real sense, even though I know a lot of the people that are getting in the industry, how many players are starting this. I mean, do we have an idea of the size of the industry, how many jobs are going to be created over the next 1 year to 10 years? Are there metrics around that yet, or are we still finding out?
I think there are some metrics. You know, we have some of that built into some of our pro forma, and I don't have it with me today, and I probably should be able to answer that on a larger scale when we talk about the industry. I can tell you that Kelly's Green will bring 130 jobs at
yeah.
least.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what kind of jobs are those? Because one thing it's been interested, you know, I've looked at this and said, well, this is an industry that's going to help people. I think it's a mm-hmm. it's something new in Mississippi and it's exciting. I'd love to get involved in it. And I've talked to people within industry and I think to myself, I got no qualifications for any of this. Boy, when they start talking about the science of mm-hmm. what goes on mm-hmm. into these products, into the cultivation, mm-hmm. you know, into all of these things. I mean, this is a science.
It's an expertise, for sure.
It is an expertise. Mm-hmm. It is a very scientific thing, very similar to pharmaceutical manufacturing. I mean,
right.
you need
right.
to know your stuff. So are there people in Mississippi that are qualified to do these things? Or initially, are we going to be bringing in some people that relocate to Mississippi to train a generation of Mississippians to get into this industry?
Well, I was going to say, I think training's important, and I think most companies like us will have our operating procedures and we'll be able to train our employees. Yeah, it is very scientific. And so, sure, I think that they will be some there will be some talent that comes from other states, obviously, to help people get going. I mean, I think everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that are from Mississippi that moved out to do
this.
So a lot of people are replanting
yes.
back to Mississippi, which, of course, is exciting.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
I mean, out of our 130-plus jobs, most of those jobs will go to Mississippians who are Mississippians.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have some of our core groups, such as our extraction team. Like you just said, it requires expertise.
Yeah.
Our master grower and our cultivation team, those are, as we say, we call them replants or plants here, because you have to have that expertise.
Right.
And so we're bringing that in from out of state, and our team in that regard has over 20 years legal experience in the industry, and we're super fortunate to have that. But so we'll bring those from out of state, but the vast majority of those 130-plus jobs will go to Mississippians that are mm-hmm. here
trainable jobs. And I know there's going to be retail outlets and those
sure.
kinds
sure.
of things, but
sure.
I am really amazed. I've had several people on air and had so many conversations with people that are in the industry, and I've seen some of the blueprints from mm-hmm. some of these facilities, and you know, there's clean rooms and there's just,
yep.
it's a medical grade facility. And
right.
I don't think people understand, you know, exactly what's going on there. So the knowledge base certainly in here, and I guess it's probably going to take, you know, it's going to take years. And I don't know if any university in the state forward thinking enough to say, we're going to start opening, you know, start a program to feed this industry within Mississippi. Have we heard anything about that?
We have. I know other states do
yeah.
Have programs. Even states like Tennessee that don't have a medical marijuana program, they still offer cannabis classes on some of their community college sites, because I just happened to look one day and see that.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting. Our bill also provides, so our Cannabis Act provides for additional training also for any employee in a medical cannabis establishment that they have to have through the Department of Health. And then also anyone working in this industry also has to have a special work permit. So I know that our bill already is going to require some extra steps for anyone in any position in a medical cannabis establishment to have some additional training. I would imagine if colleges are smart, they will jump on that to start trying to obviously give some of those courses and classes, because it is an amazing industry that's come into this. And what we were very excited about from the beginning was being able to provide, number one, a great number of jobs, but number two, a great number of well-paying jobs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because like you said earlier, you know, we're like the poorest state in the country. And one of the things that we always dealt with a lot, especially in Jackson, was people being able to find jobs where they could keep their lights on, or if they don't have transportation. We don't have a huge public transportation system in Jackson. Certainly those people would have a lot of trouble getting to Canton or getting to Raymond or Byram or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it was really important that we thought we could make a huge effort and impact right here.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. It's so interesting to me, the players in this industry, and I think this has become more common knowledge. I mean, I'm looking at the two of you, neither one of you wearing tie-dye, you know, and it's just, you know, this reefer madness thing that has gone on for forever. And I was at a funeral, and one of my best friend's brother came in with his family from North Carolina. They are he has been an IT guy with, I think, IBM or somebody for forever. It's just a great guy, very upstanding. He's got just the most polite kids. They're just fantastic. You know, it's just the all-American conservative Christian family. And I was talking to the daughter of one of my best friend's brothers, and I was like, well, you know, what are you doing? She had been studying at University of Georgia, and I had gone to Georgia for a couple of years. So I was talking to her about what's going on in Athens, and I finally just said, yeah, so what are you planning on doing? She said, well, I've been studying horticulture, and I'm going to start doing marijuana. I believe it was in North Carolina at the time. I don't know if they had the law yet, or even if they have. Anyway, she saw a place where she thought it was going to go. And I remember just kind of smiling and whipping my head around to the parents. They couldn't be prouder because she was not going to be a drug dealer.
Right.
This was a girl who had really studied horticulture. She knows this is an industry that helps a lot of people, and she's applying herself to something she loves and sees a huge opportunity for herself professionally. But she is just the most sweet, conservative young girl you've ever met in your life. And that's, you know, that is across the board what you meet in this industry.
And I think that's such an important point, because I think part of our, it should be the industry-wide. I know for Kelly's Green, part of our job is to change that narrative.
Right, absolutely.
There is a cultural social justice sort of, and I hate to use those words. I know those can be, you know, those words mean different things to different people, but it should be ingrained in everybody, in every business to go forward. In my opinion, you can't differentiate medical marijuana and compassion.
Right.
You have to change the narrative. You have to bring that with you on your journey.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of pressure on the industry here, too. Look, there's going to be people who, you know, operate outside of the, I'm not talking about even the business side of it, but individuals, somebody's going to get a card that doesn't really need a card. Somebody's going to get marijuana just to get, I mean, they're doing it today. They're already doing these things.
Right.
It's not really introducing a new product, but there's a lot of pressure on the industry to be this professional,
right,
you know, very above board industry. And you see players from across, and they've done this in other states. They've proven them, you know, they've proven the naysayers wrong in a lot of these cases where they just think that they're letting something bizarre into the state, but they're not. These are professional medical facilities providing medical quality products for people who are suffering with diseases.
Absolutely.
That's right.
You know.
And that's why it was really important for Kelly and I at the beginning to be vocal about it, because we weren't wearing tie-dye shirts and whatever. And what we realized early on is that a lot of people, if you actually just meet and talk with them, that have, you know, it's always political until it's personal. So they may have a family member that's suffering. They were buying it on the streets.
Right.
And I mean, these are like upstanding citizens,
absolutely,
judges, lawyers, or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and so that's what always bothered me, I guess, with this fight, was that I would much prefer a politician or whomever just say, I don't like weed. I'll never support it. I don't agree with it. rather than making up some of this stuff about what's right. going to happen when it gets here to Mississippi and how horrible it's going to be, and there's going to be pot shops on every corner. You know, it was just like the most ridiculous stuff in the world that they were spouting out there. But if you're vocal about it, which Kelly and I have been, we've been in the fight since the beginning, we did not want to be one of those companies that sat on the background and said, well, let's see how this plays out, and then we'll talk about it. Or let's see if 65 passes, and then we'll talk about it. We wanted people to be able to meet us and talk to us right now and see that we're not these, you know.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, so, to reframe. Yeah, yes. Right, reframes the whole thing.
And I think that's so. That's such an important part. You know, I'm always, always happy to talk to anybody, whether they support medical marijuana
sure.
or not.
Yeah.
I'm always happy to share my journey. I'm always happy to share my reasons. I'm always happy to talk about issues that come up in the industry. Like you just said, there will be issues.
Yeah.
And so I'm always happy to do that. I love to have intelligent conversations about it where we resolve issues and, you know, make ground, cover ground.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be very interesting. And I think a lot of people are going to be pleasantly surprised. As I said, you know, people, you know, it's so funny with the naysayers and the kind of the fear mongers, what I consider them. I go to Colorado. I've got a great friend out in Colorado, and I go out and see her, you know, several times.
Right.
It's a great state.
It is.
They're really doing well.
Right.
Yeah. And you don't see any difference driving down the road. It's not this.
Except the roads are better.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, that was one of the funniest things that I saw, you know, when we were going back and forth with the bill was, you know, somebody saying, oh, there's going to be billboards. You know, you're going to have to see billboards of it. And it was like, they've already made those regulations. We can't have billboards. You know what I mean? Like, it was just so silly that people were grabbing onto that, going, oh, yeah, our kids are going to see billboards. But, yeah, I spent some time in Michigan, too, and they have a rec and medical. And it was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was great up there.
Right.
Great schools, great roads, great. I mean, it was so nice.
Yeah.
So,
it just has not been the catastrophe everywhere. And so when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the communities that are opting out. I'm going to have some person or two join us. They're going to start doing what's near and dear to our hearts, which is signature gathering to try to defeat the petty tyrants again. My words, not anybody else's. So we'll talk about that as these cities opt out. I think that's the people need to stand up and say, look, we voted 74% for this thing, and it's not just in one community. People across the state and all kinds of demographic groups, all kind of political persuasions voted 74% for this thing. There's a lot of people that could benefit from it. So now it's just time to get, you know, the last line of resistance to stand down a little bit. So we'll talk about the signature effort to override some of the local bureaucrats. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stay with us. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show on 103.9 WYAB. We're talking about the new emergence of the new industry here with medical marijuana in Mississippi. It's finally happening. So we're taking a look at kind of what shape it's taking. We're talking to Kelly Williams and Chad King. They're with Kelly Green, one of the new facilities that will be opening up, offering manufacturing and also dispensaries as well. But one of the other hurdles that has come in the way is there is an opt-out provision in the law that was passed by our legislature, which gave, I believe, every municipality 90 days to opt out. If the Board of Supervisors or City Council, or I don't know if the mayor can do it themselves, whatever, they had a chance to opt out. And some of the ones here local in central Mississippi are starting to opt out. So I have offered up these airwaves anytime anybody wants to oppose these things and fight back against those. So we have got Jonathan Brown on the phone. And Jonathan Brown was involved in the Ballot Initiative 65 effort. He did a great job with that, and he is now coming back to take a look at these. So, Jonathan, appreciate you joining us.
Hey, Mike, I really appreciate you having me on the show, and it's been a while, but it's good to talk with you again.
Yeah. So you are you're back. We're back in the signature game again, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Back at it. You know, it's kind of ironic because this is how we kind of got into this in the first place. I know y'all were speaking about earlier in the show the history of how we got here, and it started with, you know, 170,000 some odd Mississippians. We actually ended up getting over 200,000 total signatures, but putting it on the ballot in the first place so that the people could decide for themselves whether or not they wanted to have medical marijuana in our state. And as we all know, in November of 2020, the state overwhelmingly voted to the tune of more than 74% to enact a medical marijuana law. And we've been in a lot of places since then, but the fact that the people made their voices heard and used the democratic process to make this selection, I think is a really beautiful thing. And so now that these local opt-outs are starting to happen, we've got a chance again for the people to come together, make their voice heard, and remind our leaders that, yes, we really do need medical marijuana for these patients in our communities.
Right. And I got to tell you, I don't not give our state legislature much credit for much of anything. I'm a radical, just sits on the outside and judges everybody else, you know, but I'm impressed by the fact that there is a mechanism where the people can get right back in the game. If a local municipality tries to opt out and the people don't want that, that there is a way to overcome that. So we have now seen Gluckstadt, Ridgeland, and is it Brandon or Rankin County have all...
Brandon.
Brandon. Okay, so Brandon's opted out. Mm-hmm. What is the recourse for citizens if they want to try to reverse this opt-out?
Yeah, it's a pretty simple process. It's kind of a matter of paperwork, really, and we have been here before. But as these local authorities opt out, they have 90 days to do that from the enactment of the law. So basically until the end of April to decide whether or not they want to opt out. And at that point, it triggers a mechanism where the citizens can go ahead and gather signatures to place the question back on the ballot. And the good news for us is there's not a time limit on that. We've got as much time as we need. And the other good news is that the threshold isn't nearly as high as it was the last time we were doing this. And so in each of these municipalities, we really only need to get 1,500 voter signatures. That's 1,500. To bring the question back up for a special election. So we're real hopeful and confident that we'll be able to do that in short order, and that way the people can go ahead and vote on it again.
Does this go through the same process as 65, where you have to get signatures of registered voters and they have to go through the circuit clerk's office? Is it that formalized, or is this go ahead, tell me what that is.
Yeah, it's similar, but it's not quite fleshed out. Actually, this is a new process, and so the Secretary of State's office is still promulgating rules to govern this process. But in each city or county, there's a clerk. You know, there's either a city clerk or, like you said, a circuit clerk, and they'll be checking these against the voter rolls to make sure that they are indeed citizens of that community and they're voters in that community. And It won't take nearly as long as it did last time, just because it's a far fewer number of signatures.
Right.
But yeah, it is a similar process so that we can make sure that we've got, you know, accurate information.
Yeah, the circuit clerks may pass out when they see some of us walking back in the doors again with a stack of signatures. They may go through some level of PTSD themselves. So,
well, and big thanks to, you know, it is a giant bureaucracy, and it moves very slowly at times, but. You know, our circuit clerks did the heavy lifting with 65 and actually got those signatures certified. So yeah. We're grateful to them. And, you know, we're working with these clerks moving forward, make it a little bit easier this time, and make sure that this is as little of a headache on anybody as possible, because the whole point is to speed the process along and get relief to the patients, you know.
Absolutely.
And every day that there is a delay is a potential another day that these patients have to wait. And after 4 years of working on this, I think they've waited long enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just one of these things where, you know, now at the community level, it's being pulled back, clawed back again. It's already been clawed back two or three times. So this is, at least there's a pretty good mechanism to reverse this. So we've got these three areas. We've got Gluckstadt, Ridgeland, and Brandon. You're involved kind of at the top level of trying to overcome these things. What's the plan now, and how do you go about getting these signatures? How can people get involved? What can they do to help?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because there's a great website that people can head to. It's live as of this morning. It's localoptin.com. That's localoptin.com. You go to that website, you can sign up to join us out in the field as we gather these signatures, especially if you're in a community that has opted out or is thinking about opting out. We want you to go to localoptin.com and fill out that form. Let us know where you're at. We'll be in touch with you, and we'll find out more about what's happening in your area, or maybe you can hop over to another town and help us out with that effort. But yeah, we're ramping things up on this campaign this week. We're going to be going for the next, well, we're going to be going as long as it takes to get all of these opt-outs overturned. And so,
right.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is, too, not only people who want to volunteer, but can people go there if they just want to kind of go on record and say, hey, I want to sign, so that if you do a signature gathering event one weekend, that you have a database to say, hey, it's on this Saturday from, you know, 8 to 4. We're going to be out at this place collecting signatures. Come by.
Absolutely. We are rallying the troops. This is a clarion call. If you believe that the patients in the state of Mississippi have waited long enough for medical marijuana, even if it's not in your local community, you want to help out and make sure that there's no further delay in these other areas, go to localoptin.com, sign up on that form, and let us know. And we'd love to have your help in this effort. It's been, you know, it's been 4 years that we've all been working together on this. And I think, you know, by the end of this year, we'll actually have products on the shelves, and I'll be able to go to my dispensary and pick up some Kelly's Green legally through my medical marijuana card. So I think there's light at the end of the tunnel. We're on our way. We just need a little bit more of a lift to make sure that everybody in our state has safe and legal access to this life-saving medicine.
Once you get the signatures and they are presented and certified as being over the limit in those, does that just automatically nullify that opt-out, and then somebody who wants to enter the business can immediately start setting up a shop? Or what's the process?
Not quite that simple. What this petition will do is actually place the question back on the ballot.
Oh, that's right.
In a special
yeah.
election. So it's not if you're still on the fence, you know, you can still sign the petition and just say, hey, let's vote on this one more time.
Right.
And
that would be
be another special election. And then at that point that it'll be, overturned. And we're confident that, I mean, in every single one of these precincts and every single one of these counties, the vote in favor of Initiative 65 was huge. So
Right. Once
it gets put on the ballot, it's kind of a foregone conclusion.
Does the special election have to be called within a certain period of time? Or did I see something pretty quickly?
60 days.
60 days.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right, Chad. Right. They have 60 days once we turn in the signatures.
Yeah. Okay.
So they have to run notice of it for 3 consecutive weeks in the paper
for
that election.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the next hurdle, I think, is getting people out to vote. I mean, we had a huge overwhelming majority when 65, but that was also a presidential election and wasn't a special election. So so the fight doesn't stop just when you get the petition there. You still got to keep people engaged and make sure that people know this is a special election and when to go and where to go and make sure they turn out then too.
Yeah, that will be important because I would imagine the people that are aligned against this, that are trying to keep it out of these communities, will definitely be putting the word out to tell people to go out and try to stop it. And so we don't want to see the people who are, you know, we don't want to see the 26% somehow become more motivated than the 74%. So, all right, JB, we're going to keep up with you. You have access to me. You can text me anytime. We'll have you on. I want to know about events, but right now you've got localoptin.com. That's the first place people can start getting engaged on this. So we'll continue to send people there, and you keep me up to date on any efforts that y'all are doing out in the field.
Appreciate it very much. We're getting kickstarted in Gluckstadt this weekend. So please come on out, go to the website. Really appreciate the time, guys. Good luck.
Thanks, JB. Good to talk to you. All right, we got to take a quick break. That was Jonathan Brown. We'll be right back. Final segment. Time always flies. We're talking to Kelly Williams, Chad King, owners, operators, new entrepreneurs of Kelly's Green entering the medical marijuana thing. Gluckstadt, go to Local Opt-In. I'm going to find out from JB. I just let him get off the air. Do you know what they're doing on Gluckstadt?
I don't. I know that there was something, I think, this Saturday, but I couldn't find it. But I bet it's on the website.
Okay. Localoptin.com. Go in there and sign up for that and show them that you're going to support them. I'll bring you tomorrow or whenever I can. Exactly what the event is this weekend at Gluckstadt. Sorry, JB, that I cut you off without even fleshing that out. Anyway, last couple of minutes here. What do y'all want to say about the industry, about what's going on right now?
I think we'd love to just mention a couple things about the bill. We've had so many people ask us questions about the bill. In particular, Chad, you want to mention a couple things about...
Yeah, so there's a couple things that are important, I think, obviously for our children and children that have been suffering that need this. And that's certain conditions in the bill. So for minors, only physicians or osteopathic doctors can do a certification. So if you know, if you're an adult, you know, you can go see a nurse prac, you can go see all these other people.
Yeah.
But for minors, that's what's required in the bill. The other thing is, some people have asked about, how do we add a medical condition?
Right.
And so that's going to be, any resident in Mississippi can petition the Department of Health to add a condition, and the Department of Health has 60 days to rule on that.
So,
and
that's then, just an administrative ruling.
That's an administrative rule. Okay. That's correct. Doesn't have to go to the legislature. So the Department of Health can do that. And then if they deny that, you do have an appeals process through our circuit courts. So that was good that's built in. Obviously, for children that are, I say children because they're technically, I guess, 18 to 25, they carve
children
out.
To us,
right, yes.
Children
so
to me.
So 18 to 25, they carve out this exception that you have to have two practitioners that that you have to see to sign off on that. However, if you were under 18 and had a card, you don't have to do that. It carries through,
right?
Which was a good thing. And the other thing I wanted to talk about real quick, just to plug, Kelly and I, this St. Patrick's Day, Thursday at 6 o'clock or 6:30, we are doing a live on Facebook where we're going to go through a lot of these provisions in the bill as it relates to the children, as it relates to getting your card, as it relates to regulations that we already know about or have drafts of, and try to just give. And we're going to talk about our hiring process and what we're hiring for and what's happening this summer.
Great.
So,
real quick, when are the first people going to be getting cards and getting product in your estimation? I know that's a guesstimate, but
well,
6 months?
Well,
a
actually,
year?
The right now, the schedule for the Department of Health to begin certifying cards, so 120 is June. It's June. It was 120 days from the date of the of February 2nd, which was the date that the bill was signed. The Department of Health will begin licensing cultivators, extraction, and giving out cards to patients and certifying physicians.
Okay. Yes. All right.
Yep.
So it's moving along.
It is.
Well, I'm glad to see that y'all are involved. We'll keep up with you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
To everybody else, we'll see you tomorrow. Bye bye.
Bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.